get your face back up.
Oh, here is my face. Have you missed my face?
I have.
Here it is.
2 seconds.
2 seconds too long.
And I miss it.
2 seconds too long. Mm-hmm. Speaking of faces that you miss, wait, am I in the picture? Because there's somebody who wants to...
Oh, it's a little bear. Oh my gosh.
I also have a new mascot. Because
tell me about
This is where I'm at in shelter in place. This is where we're at now, is I am getting all my stuffed animals out, like any 33-year-old woman.
Naturally.
Would. And then I'm giving them backgrounds and little stories. So this guy's back in the mix. Pow-pow!
Oh my gosh, I don't think I've ever met him.
He's a hedgehog. And because I have a creative writing degree, I wanted to name him something really unique, which is why his name is Hedgy. And that's where we're at in the quarantine. Just naming stuffed animals.
Oh no, it's okay. Prish and I went on our walk yesterday, and there was a dog barking out of a window. And we had a conversation for like 20 minutes about how the dog owns its own house, pays its own bills, and like what a dog paw computer mouse would look like. So he can like
clickety-clack.
Look at his monthly statements.
Oh my god. I just am imagining him with his paws typing like burp, 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 just doing this.
Yeah. Oh. So anyways, it's a space for the imagination to roam freely.
Let's let him run wild. I know that producer Chad, I'm going to share this. He can cut it if he wants to, but producer Chad and I were talking, and he was saying that he was feeling weird about kind of like how much TV he was watching, or maybe more like looking forward to watching TV, like it was a bad thing. And I was like, you listen to me. You watch that television. That's what we have right now, and we're not going to feel bad about it. We're going to do literally whatever we can. We're going to name so many fake animals. We're going to create so many real animal backstories. We're going to learn a lot about the rich women of Beverly Hills. Okay, we're all doing our part to get through it.
Okay, hello, everyone. Hi. How are you doing?
Guess what, Caitlin?
What?
This is Special Lady Day.
Oh my god, thank god.
Thank god.
It's Special Lady Day. Wow.
Previously,
here we are.
Previously a women's history podcast, now a scone enthusiasts podcast solely. That's all it is.
Oh man, how are you doing?
I'm doing, here I am with a lot of squeaky noises. I don't need to get into a whole thing. I'm healthy and safe, and the people I love are healthy and safe, and so I'm doing just fine, and I know a lot about the inner workings of Lisa Rinna's life because of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So that is where I'm at.
I'm so glad they have so many seasons for
you. They have so many seasons. I am running out. I know there's other cities. I don't know if I'm ready to make that leap, you know? Like, feels like a big step. I will say the moment where I became slightly concerned, and I told this to my sister, just about my general state, is when I found myself recently being like, well, I mean, what would it take for me to get on a reality show? And I was like, we've gone this is the bridge too far.
I mean, I don't think we've talked to our listeners since you and I had our reality TV show Magical Week.
My God. You mean the honeymoon of our friendship?
True. I mean, it's been a honeymoon 8 years in the making, but it was pretty amazing.
Just tell them.
Yeah. So we both got Netflix party so that we could watch Love is Blind together. God. And what a wonderful, wild reality TV ride that was. It was so much fun. I would look forward to it every day. Yeah. And it was during the time that I had like a day or two off. And so I would just sit down and talk to you and drink wine and eat cake. And we would talk about our feelings and these people's feelings. God. And then also feel really grateful that we met our spouses
not
in
not in the pods
many different circumstances, and that we never had to use the word pod.
The pods. I need you to know that Mark has been doing like daily or maybe weekly workouts on his Instagram page.
Oh my
and
God.
I'm not saying that we should be doing squats and lunges every day. I'm just saying that's what Mark's doing and we need to consider it. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Mark was a jilted fitness instructor.
Jilted. The worst kind.
Yes. And very adorable. Fills his Instagram with workout videos.
Hashtag Mark. Hashtag in our hearts forever.
And
wow.
He is serving the people.
Oh, he's serving them. He's serving them workouts and he is serving them looks. Wow. Okay. Now, no longer a scone enthusiast podcast, a Mark enthusiast podcast.
And the, we are just enthusiastic for so many things.
We're living how we can. But you know what's making me alive? How's that for a segue, Caitlin? Mm-hmm. Is learning about the ladies. It really helped to have a goal this week. I'm not going to lie. A little research goal.
Yeah?
And
tell me about it.
Well, I'm not going to give anything away. And we can cut this if you want to. But I had a very hilarious conversation with Chad a couple days ago where he was like, Jessica, what lady are you covering? You still haven't told me. Like, Caitlin told me hers. And I was like, okay, it's this person. And so I said who it was. And he was like, all right, yeah, let me check. And I was like, am I good? Did we do the same person? Like, oh no. And he was like, no, you guys are separated by like, I think a few thousand years.
Perfect.
And I laughed really hard and I was like, that sounds about like us. Like, Caitlin's doing some deep research and Jessica's like, let's stay probably in the 1900s, just all the time.
Just several thousand years apart.
So
I like that. I feel a thousand years apart.
Oh,
you.
God. Touch my hand through the screen.
I feel a thousand years apart from everything right now.
I know. And that's just that. I don't really have any, like, peppy things about it. I feel like when we recorded last, things were just sort of happening over in the States for the first time. I could be wrong. And I've had a lot more energy than I do now.
Well,
that's okay.
I think we've decided that this is going to be a really cozy, easy episode.
Oh, yeah.
We are both kind of tired and exhausted for different reasons.
Yes.
Jessica is wrapped in the fuzziest bathrobe I've ever seen. I have my power work uniform on, which is a hoodie hood over my mm-hmm. head. Because mm-hmm. I brood around the house when I'm seriously working in a hoodie.
I like that very
much. Yeah. So we're here. Things are strange.
Yeah.
And I think we anticipated, and I think I remember what you were talking about. We were like, oh my gosh. We're going to do so much interesting podcasting during this time.
Yeah.
And instead, it's mostly been like, how do I manage my anxiety and oodles of work to do?
Right.
And just not totally freaking out and or screaming.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's important work.
And it's also just, I mean, I love listening to the news even when things are hard. And, you know, some of it is that I used to commute, mm-hmm. so I'd have a lot of driving time, right. and everything is so grim, I cannot listen to it anymore.
Nope.
And,
negative.
That's different.
Yeah.
I think that's a barometer sign of just where we are. So, okay, I guess what we're telling you guys is whatever you're doing, it's perfect.
Yeah, as long as you're, you know, not hurting anyone.
Yeah, again, no murders.
No murders
allowed.
Everything's nice and consensual, et cetera, et cetera. But however you're, like, if you are, you know, some people in like, cop dramas, they'll, like, wake up and their hands are covered in blood, right? And they're like, oh, God, what happened? Where am I? Me, you know, maybe you, dear listener, wake up and you're like, season 10, How did I get here? Who did this? Who watched these shows? It's fine. It's fine. Maybe you're covered in brownie batter and you don't know how it happened. You have a lot of questions. This is a time that doesn't need a lot of answers. Okay? You just...
Yeah. Ooh, I like that.
You just lick...
You don't have to answer to anyone.
No!
And if somebody is judging you for using your time, tell them that we said it's not okay.
Yeah. That's a... Listen, you're getting a tough talking to from the baddest podcast game in town. We will gently point you in a different direction.
We will redirect you.
We will redirect you like the English 101 teachers we both were. Where we go, let me ask you a question about what you're doing right now. Let me ask you a question about how the thesis for your paper is inherently racist. Now, I'm wondering if we can't rewrite it. Sorry. Flashbacks. Flashbacks to teaching.
I know.
Oh, it happens.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, whatever you're doing, it's great.
Fine.
I've been doing a lot of yoga with Adrienne, as we covered last time. I highly recommend any of her yoga video sequences that involve giving yourself lots of hugs.
Oh god, those are the best. The ones on the floor, you just lay down.
Mm-hmm.
I know we usually save this for the end, but here's a hot quarantine tip from Jessie. I discovered I was having an issue getting dressed because I like to go for a walk in the morning. I put my gym clothes on, which are stretch pants, etc. And then I would come back and be like, you know, distracted by something else, and then maybe not change my clothes. And then the whole day I'm just in my gym clothes and it feels weird and like the day hasn't started. But I don't want to, like, what am I going to put on? Am I going to put on like a work dress? I'm not going to put on jeans. And like, what is this? You know, come on. Get out of here with those jeans. And then I realized I should just buy multiple pairs of the same black stretch pant. And I did. And now I go for my walk, and then I come home, and I mostly shower. And then, that's because not 100% success rate there, but then I change into the black stretchy pants, and they are my work stretch pants. Very different from the workout stretch pants. I have opened up a whole new life for myself now.
I know. Yeah, I have like stretch pants as an entire segment of my wardrobe.
Oh, yeah.
Only black.
Yeah.
Only high-waisted.
Oh, yeah.
But it is its own category.
Yes.
And my husband's like, why do you need to have so many black pants? And I'm like, you don't understand.
You don't understand. Stop asking questions.
No.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Caitlin,
mm-hmm.
listen, we're doing it. We are doing it. And I am desperate to hear about something that isn't whether or not Lisa Rinna and Yolanda are fighting. So tell me that you have some hot news for me in the form of a special lady.
I'm so excited. I do. Oh man, what if I just literally started my script and you soon realize it is just the plot of every single episode?
Of The Real Housewives?
Yeah.
Jiggy enters the scene. He is dressed in a tiny purple tuxedo.
Exactly.
Oh, Jiggy.
Yeah. I have something for you. I do want to give a really great shout out, though. Mm. A really great shout out. What does that even mean?
It's the best one you've ever given. That's what it means.
Guys, our brains are just, I feel like, my head is just one big little cloud.
Oh.
Did you see the cloud I posted on Instagram? The little cloud that was trying?
I think so. I don't remember anything.
Planned Parenthood posted it. It has nothing to do with, like, Planned Parenthood. It was just this little cloud, and there was a speech bubble, and it says, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, and then it said, I'm tired.
Oh. That's who we are. We are all this cloud.
I know. I feel like this little cloud that supports Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
But we're just trying so hard.
Yeah. That's accurate.
And we're here for you.
Yes, we love you.
Okay, I did want to give a shout out, though. We have some countries that have been really representing. Some of them I've named before,
yes.
Some of them I haven't. We have a new listener from the Philippines. Hello.
Hello.
Who are you? We love you. And then Australia has been consistently repping their listens. So the Netherlands, Denmark, the United Kingdom, Canada, and Sweden.
Nice.
So thank you so much. You're out there. We are literally thousands of miles away from you, but close to you in our hearts.
Okay, Ms. Caitlin, wonder of the world, light of my life, love of my heart.
I've got a story to tell you.
What?
So listeners, we're really cozy.
Oh boy.
You need to get really cozy. I want you to grab your favorite quarantine snack.
Yep.
Find a cozy blanket.
Yep.
Find a place you can lay down and close your eyes.
Oh, yeah. Let these...
Don't even try to clean while you listen to this.
Oh, God. What are you doing? Stop cleaning.
Stop it.
Find a tiny stuffed animal. Balance it precariously on your head. You've got a lot of options.
Find an animal and name it.
Sure.
Grab your pet if it wants to be grabbed.
Yeah.
Whatever it is you need to do to get the most cozy.
Yeah.
Because you're going to let your mind do the work on this imagination adventure.
I feel like you just sounded like, that sounded like a lyric from like a 1990s academic, like kids show, you know, like the kind of videos they used to show us in class where it was like, okay, it's 3 o'clock and class gets out at 3:30 and you can tell the teacher's like, I don't have anything else to do for the day. It's time to put on a video. And I really feel like there was a bunch of kids in brightly colored clothes singing, let your mind do the work. Let your mind do the work. Yeah. So that's what I'm imagining now. That's what I'm about to learn about, right? Is that where this is going?
Yes. No. So, yeah. So I wanted to do something that was a little adventurous. And we're moving into the waters of... ladies that are sometimes good, sometimes bad, which I know that you're very interested in.
Oh my God.
And so I'm sorry, I skipped ahead a little bit because I just liked her so much.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Does this mean we are inching ever closer to Special Lady Day Bad Girls Edition?
Yes. Yeah. This is like a practice run if it works.
Oh my God.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to get a little complicated today, but it's going to be fun. So I'm going to give my sources first. This is another one, one of the rejected princesses from Jason Porath. There's also an article about her on Amy Poehler's Smart Girls by Whitney Milam. And then there is a Vice article, which actually excerpts a chapter from a book called History versus Women by Ebony Adams and Anita Sarkeesian, which looks so fun. I want to get that book. And then a How Stuff Works article by Mark Mancini. So I'm just gonna give you a little scene really quickly to start us off.
Okay.
Really using your mind, do the work. So yeah, so this scene is pretty much paraphrased from Rejected Princesses. I have patch written it, to use a composition word. So giving him credit. Okay, it is 1809. The Chinese Navy is setting a trap for the Red Flag pirate fleet. The Navy blocks the fleet in the bay, and the authorities lay siege to the pirates for 3 straight weeks. Overwhelming them with firepower. Imagine all those explosions.
3 weeks?
It's so dusty. Yeah, 3 weeks. In the end, the Red Flags sailed through a graveyard of government ships, largely unscathed.
What?
Mm-hmm. At the head of the Red Flags stood one of the most fearsome pirates in history, Ching Shi, a former sex worker, turned leader of over 70,000 men. Yeah. This is the story of Ching Shi, history's most successful pirate, period.
Oh.
And so this story is kind of interesting because usually I shy away from stories that involve, like, women getting their power from, like, inheriting it from some kind of guy, or using male figureheads, you know?
Sure.
I think this story is really cool because she uses her power to make women's lives better in these probably, I can only assume, areas where women's lives were pretty horrible. So I think she falls into the category of a special lady.
Okay.
As I tell this story, we're going to keep in mind that one of the primary sources on Ching Shi was a Westerner she'd imprisoned for 3 months while setting up his ransom. Okay. And so it had been, it's like that anecdote is used to talk about, like, he speaks of her so highly, doesn't that speak to her character? You know, like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He is regaling these stories of this person who kept him as a prisoner. But also, it is a note that the Western white male gaze is upon us.
Oh, and
we
man.
Should read everything with a bit of a grain of salt.
I feel like we should have some kind of, like, an alarm that goes off when the Western male gaze ding, is ding, upon ding, us. Ding. Yeah, like, where, like, alert, alert, it's upon us again.
I know. Except it's just history. Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just the sound of people screaming.
No, it's just the sound of a man going, actually.
No, it's just actually, instead of alert.
I'm no expert. Actually.
I love it so much. Okay, so we don't know a lot about her. Like, a lot of the information about her isn't confirmed. Okay. And also, as I was doing my research, I heard a lot of conflicting details that really changed the way you could read the story. So I'll try to just be really clear when that happens. And also, the, like, Roman wordization of her name. For a while, I was like, am I researching two different people? Because the way they spell it is so drastically different. So the internet is confusing, mostly because of the way that, like, there are many ways that you can Englishify a Chinese name.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all over the place.
Okay.
Anyways. So Ching Shi was born into poverty in the Chinese city of Canton in 1785. And she became a sex worker to survive, or so we're told. Again, like, there's really not a lot of information. Okay. So in kind of like a twisted Cinderella pretty woman story, right off the bat, her life changed when she married the infamous pirate, Ching Shi of the notorious Red Flag Fleet. And so just to give you guys an idea of, like, how obscured she is, we don't even really know her original name.
Wow.
Ching Shi translates to the widow of Ching.
Wow.
So, like, and that's kind of, again, why I'm like, her story is definitely, like, obscured and referencing her husband a lot, right? If that's right. Her name. And so from How Stuff Works, I got the information that he quotes Deanne Murray, who's a history professor at Notre Dame. And he says that Ching Shi was an invention of an early 19th century author who was endeavoring to render a Chinese text into English. So, like, not only is her name obscured in the translation from Chinese to English, but then also it's the translation of a name that wasn't originally hers. So that's, I guess, like, wow. The layers of translation that we're going through. Yeah. And we can kind of relate that to the story as a whole. And actually, many Chinese texts refer to her as Mrs. Ching. You know, sometimes people say, well, that's actually the more correct version is by Mrs. But I'm just going to call her Ching Shi.
Okay.
I have this great quote from Ebony Adams and Anita Sarkeesian. But this is kind of about her. We don't know exactly what Ching looked like, although some historians have assumed she caught the eye of her pirate husband through good looks rather than her considerable intelligence. While there are flamboyant but dubious accounts invented by Western writers of a gorgeous goddess wielding swords and wearing glittering battle gear covered in golden dragons, more reliable texts describe Ching Shi as a good military strategist, a strict disciplinarian, and an excellent businesswoman. This much was true. So I love that description. And so we already get these, like, contending gazes on her and, like, the way that people are remembering her. But what we do know is more how she acted, and we don't really care how she looked.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to get into the story, but I also want to tell you why there are so many pirates in the South China Sea at that time, which I think is interesting.
Okay.
I see a lot of connections to the Trung sisters, really surface connections, but these kind of like female warriors and how we remember them. And are we describing their armor or versus what they did? But also at that time, remember how we talked about with the Trung sisters that in Vietnam, there are always these skirmishes for independence.
Right.
And so remember the Trung sisters are thousands and thousands of years beforehand, but it's like, what's going on in Vietnam right now? A skirmish for independence. So from 1771 to 1802, Vietnam was embroiled in the Tay Son Rebellion, which was a peasant-led uprising against the Li dynasty. So it's like Groundhog's Day, right? And so lacking a strong naval force, the rebel forces contracted small-time pirates to fight and loot on their behalf. So they had these mercenaries. So those allowances and those exchanges between those fighters and those contracts created an environment where organized large-scale piracy was flourishing. So it was just like the perfect time to be a pirate. And so in 1802, the South China Sea had roughly 50,000 pirates in it.
What?
Yeah, which I had no idea. So
that's
this is
a
just
lot.
Yeah, it's like if you want to be a pirate, this is your time to blossom and shine.
This is the moment.
Yeah. And so Ching Shi's husband, and I've seen him called Ching the First or Ching Shi. I'm just going to call him her husband because it's kind of confusing because they both have the same name. Ching Shi joined her husband and they together commanded these five fleets that were kind of turned into this confederation of pirates, which is kind of cool.
Wow.
And so this is in 1804. So within 2 years, you know, I have 50,000 pirates. That's 1802. 2 years later, just the Ching Shi and her husband's fleets had 70,000 men and 400 large sailing vessels.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. And so because that was just so many people and so many boats, they broke them up into these smaller semi-autonomous squadrons.
Okay.
That and all the leaders were answerable to them. So
wow.
You have, and each one had a different colored flag. So you have the red flag fleet, the black flag fleet, and so on. So it's just this immense army of boats.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's pretty powerful. And it's kind of interesting, like the relationship between the Chinese government and the pirates, I never could put my finger on it because I have this information, I believe it's from Rejected Princesses, that the emperor gave Ching Shi's husband the golden dragon of the imperial staff, which basically promoted him to the rank of a prince. And so you could kind of arguably say that Ching Shi was kind of a princess because of that. However, there were conflicts going on between the Chinese government and the pirates. So I don't really understand how that works. I wonder if there's kind of, you know, you have this kind of like glorious image of like a bank robber, you know, or something like that. I wonder if there's like, you know, like it's a bit, what would you say? It's kind of a love-hate thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Ching Shi's husband died really suddenly in a tsunami in 1807.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So he's out of the picture. And so Ching Shi takes on the family business and assumes control of the red flag fleet.
Oh,
and so,
okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She's like, this is the time. So according to the legend, like, the fleet and the captains were all kind of scattering. They're all like, oh, power vacuum. And so she makes this big announcement. She gets all of the leaders together and she says, under the leadership of a man, you have all chosen to flee. We shall see how you prove yourselves under the hand of a woman.
Okay. And then she's like, by the way, this hand of a woman has a mic and I'm dropping it.
Drop. You don't know what a mic is yet.
Guess what? It's coming. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot.
So suddenly she is in charge of all of those boats, all those flags. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she changed shit up. So this is where it gets like complicated and strange. Okay. Not strange, I guess, probably very specific to that time and place.
Okay.
So she does, and this is, she kind of puts this person named Ching Pao in as her figurehead.
Okay.
Which is also, again, kind of why I was like, well, okay, there's a lot of dudes getting in the way here. But mm-hmm. Ching Pao was very charismatic, and he also was not that smart. And
what?
So
wait,
she was kind of
what?
Like,
hold on. There was a man who was a figurehead who was charismatic, but not that smart.
It's like,
wait,
I've heard of this before.
I've never seen this in real life. This must only be something that happened in ancient times. Do go on.
I know, what a foreign concept. So yeah, uh-huh. So anyways, she definitely is calculating and kind of sees, like, he can rally the troops and she can uh-huh. tell him whatever, to do whatever. So she's kind of like, okay, I'll make this work for me. The interesting thing about Ching Pao, though, was she ended up marrying him.
Twist.
To kind of, like, have their allegiance. However, Ching Pao, before her husband had died, was kind of her husband's right-hand man.
Oh.
Slash her husband's lover.
Oh.
Slash his adopted son.
Oh.
Yes. Which is where things get a little awkward.
Yeah.
But I think what had happened was her husband had kind of saw this, like, younger, charismatic person and was like, hey, I want you to work with me. Maybe there was some kind of, like, legal leverage in having adopted him. However, he was also like, I like you in other ways. Anyways.
Feels a little predatory.
Yeah, it feels a little weird. Anyways, okay. Her husband was long gone at this point. She was like, you know what? I'm going to marry you and manipulate you. Which is what happened.
This is why anyways. It's Bad Girls Edition.
Yeah, this is Bad Girls Edition. So, yeah, so they kind of created this partnership. As a female captain, she made herself twice as feared and twice as ruthless as any other leader. Some of her rules included, if you broke her code of piracy, you would have your head chopped off with an axe and your body dumped into the ocean. Yeah. She also
First rule?
Yeah. I have some more details later on. She really sticks to the rule of keeping a tight ship.
Okay.
But she also made sure that no women were mistreated by her crew members. Female prisoners were ordered to be set free unharmed, unless a pirate wished to marry. So she really saw the value of women in, like, protecting women's lives. Particularly, I can only imagine, like, the chaos of a pirate ship and how terrifying it would probably be to be a female prisoner.
Sure.
And so I can only imagine how many women she protected by doing that. And so kind of by, like, keeping a really tight rule on her men, she really controlled them. And she was like, you're not going to mistreat women.
Wow.
And they listened to her. So here's a little bit of information about how big and intense and powerful her pirate fleet was.
Okay.
So the Red Flag Fleet, which is hard to say, soon grew control over every major Chinese pirate organization. So she's like mob boss of the sea.
My God.
Yeah. So she has her hands everywhere. And so at her peak, she controlled 1,800 ships and 80,000 pirates.
What?
Yeah. So she's just, like, growing this business. And one of my favorite statistics is that stationed at the port of Tianpai, there were 270 government-owned ships. And after she attacked, 266 fell under her control. So out of 270 government ships, 4 didn't make it.
Wow.
Yeah, and so she grew a lot of her money through Canton salt trade, which I thought was really interesting.
Hmm.
She would, just like the mafiosos in, I don't know, like New York in the 70s or whatever, she would demand patronage from these merchants.
Oh.
And so I'll keep you safe if you give me a cut. And so the thing that I find really humorous is she made so much revenue from this that she had to establish land-based financial offices.
What?
So she was like, we actually need some bureaucracy to, like, keep things going. So we're going to open up some office buildings.
Who's working there? Oh my God, can you imagine?
Yeah, I just love the person who's like, I just go to work every day, bring my lunch, crunch some numbers for Ching Shi. Right. You know, like, this is a just big... Like,
hanging out on a water cooler.
I know.
Talking about the salt trade.
Pirate hot goss. Like,
hot goss of the pirates.
Did you know who got beheaded the other day? So, yeah. She's operating so much on this coast. And so in order to do that, she did make this very strict pirate code, which she's famous for. So I'm going to read you some. This is from Rejected Princesses, pretty much verbatim. And we'll go over through most of them. And so in order to keep control, she had some really serious punishment. And yeah, no exceptions. So, but some of it's kind of funny. Ching Shi must okay all attacks beforehand. If you attack before she gives you permission, you are beheaded. You give all of your loot to your superior, who distributes it afterwards. If you disobey once, you are beaten. If you disobey twice, you are dead. If you desert your post or take shore leave without permission, disobey once, we cut off your ears since you clearly were not using them. If you disobey twice, you are dead. Rape of a female captive is beheading. If you want to have sex with a female prisoner, you take her to as your wife, you are faithful to her, and you treat her well, or we take your head. And this is consensual too. She has to agree. Okay. And one thing that I love is that, she doesn't use the word plunder. She renames it transferring shipment of goods.
Oh my God.
'Cause it sounds nicer.
It does.
Yeah, so that's pretty intense and pretty brutal. And Ebony Adams and Anita Sarkeesian in their book kind of has this really great explanation, which I like. They say, of course, like so many male leaders, conquerors, and generals throughout history, her prosperity and success came at the cost of innocent lives. Her remarkable story is a reminder that regardless of the limitations placed on them, women can be anything men can be. Brilliant and brutal, courageous and cruel, powerful and dreadful.
Right.
Which I like. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, we can literally be anything a male ruler can, and sometimes it's being really intense.
Sometimes it's horrible.
Yeah. So she's complicated.
She is complicated.
But I also think we have to remember that she's like living under very different times.
Well,
and just
like
the way we look at rules and laws and things like that. But because of her kind of very specific, very regulated rules, the red flags were unstoppable. They led raids and pillages up and down the Chinese coast. They never lost a battle. They regularly embarrassed the navies of South China. They grew notorious for kidnapping Chinese officials, blockading rivers, and rerouting anybody who opposed their will. And in 1809, the Chinese government, with the help of the Portuguese, made an effort to isolate and kill her, but they didn't. They sent suicide boats, that's what they were called, ones loaded with straw and explosives, and set them on fire. This is the scene I told you about earlier.
Yeah.
And they launched them at the pirates. The red flags extinguished the flames, repaired the ships, and incorporated those ships into the fleet.
Oh,
so
my
in
God.
The end, the pirates lost 40 people and not a single ship. The leader of the government expedition falsified the reports to make himself look better because he was so embarrassed.
Oh my
so he
God.
Was like, let's not tell anyone about this. Let's just rewrite this. It never happened.
That's convenient.
Yeah, he was just like, this is too embarrassing. What
can
I do? So eventually, though, and there are kind of two stories to this. One, the way that we can interpret this is that the government's persistent interference became just, like, too troublesome, and she was like, ugh, I'm so annoyed by you, this isn't worth it anymore.
Okay.
Or the Chinese government decided a different strategy, and they offered a peace treaty rather than continuing to attack. And so one of the, so I'm not really sure which one happened. I've heard different conflicting ideas. And also another one is that the government kind of through this new strategy offered amnesty to some of her other fleets. So like the Black Flag fleet and the other fleets, they said, we'll give you amnesty if you stop to like help us catch her. So either way though, she, I feel like as the Last Podcast on the Left people would say, she flipped it and reversed it. And she was like, this is a good business opportunity. So she showed up at the house of the Chinese governor in the city of Canton. And she was like, let's make a deal.
Wow.
So yeah. And apparently she showed up like kind of flanked by all of her crew members. So she wasn't armed, but there was like no way they could get to her. So I love this like image of her just marching into the governor's home and is like, we're going to negotiate.
Hi, I'm here with my people.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's like, no, you are negotiating with me, which I love. And so she basically spends how much time? She spent months bargaining with the government. And so, because she wanted everybody to be set up well and treated well. So they decided to disband the Red Flag Fleet. Wow. And in return, she and her crew would be pardoned and allowed to retire unpunished. And she was allowed to keep all of the loot and money that she'd acquired over the years.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically she's like, we'll stop now. We will not be punished. Thanks. And they were like, and like, I mean, that just shows how fearful and exhausted the Chinese government was because they were like, sure.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. And so Cheng Pao, her husband / ex-husband's lover, child, I don't think he was a child. I think he was an adult.
Okay.
Let's just be clear.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good, good, good.
He was like a consenting adult. He was given a prestigious new position in the Navy.
Oh.
And Qing Shi was given the aristocratic title of Lady by Imperial Decree.
Oh.
So, yeah. So she retired.
What?
And just kind of chilled out. She spent the final years of her lives running a brothel in a gambling den. She died peacefully at the age of 69 in 1844, and she was a wealthy and respected woman. Wow. And so I have this quote by Whitney Milam. She died an extremely wealthy woman, but she lived as an invincible pirate queen.
Ah! Oh my God.
And that's how you do it.
That is it.
Yeah. So she like... And I guess the thing that makes her one of the most successful pirates is that mostly pirates' lives end in tragedy. You know, you're captured and you're executed.
Right.
And so she's one of the few, you know, she's a very successful pirate just in terms of, like, the business that she ran, the people that she led, and also the fact that she was able to negotiate a long and peaceful life.
Wow.
Which is pretty much unheard of.
Yeah. That's
yeah, so that's the story of Qing Shi, the most successful pirate in history.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So yeah, I hope that you are able to sail upon the seas of your imagination.
Oh. When I'm letting my mind do the work. Let your mind do the work.
Yeah.
What a happy ending.
I know, it's like surprising.
Huh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, and also I love, though, that she was, like, I love that she was such a protector of women. I feel like that time period all over the world was pretty grim.
Right.
And I feel like there weren't a lot of people looking out for women.
No.
On a big scale. And, you know, you always hear about, like, war being conducted through women's bodies. And I love that she was, like, we're not going to do that.
We're not doing that here. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Man, Caitlin... You are finding these ancient stories.
I just wanted some fun ones. I feel like now we need big, sweeping adventure.
Yeah.
We need to not be close in any way to right now.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Like, you can feel the salt spray and the
smell the gunpowder and smoke.
Yeah. It's stressful in its own way, of course, but wow.
Different stress.
Different stress. Different stress. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
We can just
much.
Imagine the life of that, like, little bureaucratic worker, though. That's like, I'm just here on the land.
Yep. I'm just...
Just making money.
Just making sure everybody's W-2s are printed out in time. You gotta... Now, you... And what do you want to claim? You can do a 2, you can do a 1, or you can do a 0. And what you're going to find is that changes your withholding. Okay, who's got a question?
It sounds really nice, right?
I hear you have some assets that you would like the government to not claim. Just chests of rubies.
I know, yeah.
Glory. Oh, my God. Wow, I like that very, very much. I kept bracing myself. I was like, here it comes. And here, oh, no. Everything's pretty chill.
She just nailed it? I guess she did.
Nailed it. 69? That's a good old age for the time, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Though I'm not sure what life expectancies were at that point in that part of the world.
1844? I feel like that's pretty good.
I feel like it's gotta be. Watches, like, all of these ghosts from 1844 are like, we lived till we were 99.
We're like, we're so sorry, ghosts. We're just guessing.
Ghosts were just trying. And this is the point in isolation that I've reached. I'm now imagining ghosts talking to us. Everything's fine. There's nothing to worry
They're
about.
They're fact-checking ghosts.
Fact-checking ghosts. There's nothing spookier than a false statement. Okay.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, wow. That's a beautiful. That was beautiful. Okay. I'm really excited to share this lady with you.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Tell me about her.
Okay. So a little precursor. As we talked about, this is a relaxed fit. Oh, excuse me. Just a relaxed. Can't totally steal that phrase, but it's a relaxed episode. It's a cozy episode.
Cozy quarantine episode.
Cozy quarantine. And I wanted to find somebody kind of similar, not similar at all to who you covered, but similar in that there wasn't going to be a lot of, like, really terrible things discussed. I did not totally nail that. But
I know I realized mine. I was like, oh, there are a lot of beheadings. Lots of ears getting chopped off.
sure. None of that in mind that I know of. But there's some trauma. So we're a little bit somber, but overall, I would say we're going to go onto a kind of dreamy ride. We're going to go all the way back. You were back. So much farther back than me, but we're going to go back to 1908.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe a little closer than thousands of years apart, I would think, right?
Yeah. We were only about 150 years apart.
And for us, that's really good.
It's really
good. For us, that's really good. Yeah. but we're going to go back and last precursor, this special lady has the most amount of names and words that I'm not super comfortable pronouncing. So hold on to your hat, because we're going to do the best we can.
I believe in you.
Keep it on there. I was like, oh, a lot of this is French? Perfect. I studied Spanish. It should be fine. This first one's not French, though, but go with me, Caitlin. Caitlin, go with me.
I'm here.
To Poughkeepsie, New York. April 23rd, 1908, where the world welcomed Ms. Lee Miller into its open arms. And who was Lee Miller, you ask? Well,
who is Lee Miller?
She was a model. She was a muse. She was a photographer, a surrealist artist, a war correspondent, and a gourmet chef.
Oh my God. So she's like 70 people in one?
Exactly. I want to start with my sources. So my first source was the Lee Miller Archives, which is a website. Her son has put together. He also wrote a book about her, which I have yet to read, but highly recommend. And you can find so much about her life and so many of her photographs in the archives. And we'll get to that a little bit more later. I also drew a lot from a Vanity Fair article called Don't Let History Forget This Incredible Female World War II Photographer by Alex Beggs.
Is she the one that you used to do the photos of? And oh, okay, I'm so excited.
Ding,
Jessica used to do a lesson in her class with her. And when we were teaching, you taught me how to teach the class.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Okay, I'm really sitting back and getting cozy
Okay,
now.
Get like extra cozy. And we're going to talk about that a little bit too. And then a third article that was published in The Guardian called Lee Miller, War, Peace, and Pythons by Blake Morrison.
I cannot wait to hear about how pythons figure into this.
Well, we might not get there, but just imagine. So yes, I wanted to start by saying that when I taught English 101, I used to do this lesson where I would take one of her photographs and I would show just tiny parts of it at a time, just little corners of it, one at a time to my students, and have them write about each thing I showed them. And the question was always, what is this a picture of? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get to that specific photograph later.
Yay.
We're going to talk about it. But what I loved about that photograph when I would teach it is the story is so much bigger than you can imagine when you're starting to parse apart that particular photograph. And it kind of is standing in for me as a great image or a great symbol for what her life was like. You can look at all of these parts of her life, and there are so many, and we're going to go through as much as we can in the most relaxed way that we can. But if you only focus on one part of it, you really don't see the whole, right? You don't see the whole of Lee Miller.
What a metaphor.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes. Poem school, everybody. Okay. So.
That was your child's lesson for the day. Drink wine.
That's right. So Lee Miller. So Lee Miller was born on April 23rd, 1908 in Poughkeepsie, New York. We're actually not going to talk about her childhood pretty much at all. We're going to jump ahead. Lee Miller's childhood is for her to talk about, and she was private about a lot of her life. So we're going to respect that, whether or not these articles do themselves.
Yeah, don't be nosy.
Let's start with her career in fashion, because that's, my God, I love this so much, how she got started. Here's how she began her fashion career. She's a model, all right? She's a model. She was discovered, I believe, on the street and, like, pulled in to a campaign. So she's
wow.
She's gorgeous. That's not the only way that we're going to know her, but she was literally bumped into by the publisher Condé Nast in Manhattan. He's struck by her looks, takes her on as a model for Vogue, and instantly makes her the face of Kotex tampon advertisements.
Whoa.
So like, hey, my life has changed. I'm a freaking model, right? Like, I'm all in. And she modeled for a lot of other fashion magazines at the time, in the 20s. But from there, she moved behind the camera. And now I'm going to reference some people that, if you are really familiar with this particular art movement, you'll be like, oh my God, what? She worked with them? I am not super familiar, so I might not have the correct reaction. But she became...
Should I react for you?
if you know who I'm talking about. So she moves behind the camera and starts to become the pupil of Man Ray.
Oh my God. Yeah, that is kind of exciting.
Okay, so thank you. And pupil, mistress. She was known as Madame Man Ray in Paris. And
ooh la la.
I know, right? But even though she's, you know, his muse and everything, she's getting kind of frustrated at living a life in front of the lens. And there's this great quote from her where she says, "I looked like an angel, but I was a fiend inside."
Oh,
right?
love it.
And she's like, no, like I want to make my own art, and I want to be prolific. And so she watches Man Ray, she studies him, but then she moves on to make a name for herself. And I really liked how she was described in this Vanity Fair article. Biggs said she was always in the driver's seat, right? She's always in the driver's seat, and she's like studying surrealist art, and she's making all of these amazing connections. And Man Ray, I think, is like not thrilled about it in a lot of ways.
Is he a little jelly?
He's a little jelly. She also was, I want to say this correctly. She was very romantically open-minded. Perhaps a little bit more than Man Ray was. And, you know, she took other lovers. She didn't understand why that was an issue. Man Ray wasn't thrilled about it. But she just sort of was like, well, why not? Why wouldn't I? Right? Like, why wouldn't I do these things?
They needed to have a boundaries talk that didn't happen.
They might have needed to have a boundaries talk. It said that her relationships with men were prolific and complicated. At one point, she lived as a kept woman married to a wealthy man in Egypt, which is really fascinating to me. But it doesn't last very long. She ends up going through a spiritual phase. The marriage doesn't stay. She ends up meeting Roland Penrose, who was also very romantically open-minded. But it sounded like they did have the boundaries talk and they were on the same page.
Yeah,
so they were having
vibing.
Some exciting, spicy times. Some threesomes with other surrealist artists. You know, they were just like, they're out there, they're living their best life. You know, amidst all of this, and she time in Egypt comes to a close, she ends up returning to Britain to live among her artist friends, and she starts pursuing a career at British Vogue, and then World War II begins. So, like, let's just take a quick look. She's, like, modeled in her 20s, and then she was studying surrealism and being a muse and learning how to be a photographer, and also she was creating, like, different techniques, like solarization, which was a partial reversal of black and whites that creates a silvery aura in photographs. And, like, you know, she's just, like, doing all of this stuff. She's already doing so much. Like, she's married to a new man, and they have a very exciting and consensual love life. And now, okay, here's the war. And this is a very different time, of course, right? I love this quote from her son, which is in regards to how she reacted to World War II breaking out. He said, it would have been incredibly easy for her to disappear to America and sit the war out, but she didn't. I think she wanted to stay and try and do something. And nobody was going to give her a gun or an airplane or something useful like that, so she used her camera.
Wow,
so,
using what she has.
Using what she has. So at first, her image, her photography is still kind of described almost kind of as like surrealist in its way, right? They talk about some of her photos of different blitzes as like, you know, a bombed chapel with bricks pouring from its door, resembling a mouth with a tongue hanging out, a grounded air balloon with two geese in the foreground. And like, it's, she's not playing with it, but she's still looking at it from a different perspective as she's doing this work. But she starts to follow the German retreat, and this playfulness starts to leave the work, because
now she's
seeing the real horrors. And some of this is really upsetting. So just like a warning to our listeners, maybe at this point. But the Guardian article talks about how she took photos of a high-ranking Nazi and his family who had committed suicide, of an SS prison guard floating in a canal, emaciated survivors, and like heaps of dead bodies at Buchenwald and Dachau. she cabled Vogue and said, I implore you to believe this is true. Right?
So yeah, she's doing truth work. She's documenting. Yeah,
it's changed, and obviously it changed her, right? One of her most famous photos, the one that I used to teach, was taken in Munich. And so the photo is of her in a bathtub, and it's actually Hitler's bathtub in Hitler's house. He's gone at this point. But she's in boots and a uniform, and it's this incredible photograph of her, like beautiful smooth skin, and she's kind of looking over her shoulder, and you can see these muddy boots in the foreground, and you can see the portrait of Hitler that Hitler had in his bathroom, which is...
of himself.
Of himself. So strange and telling. And she's just, like, strikingly beautiful in this terrifying place. The way that they described it in the Guardian article was that, you know, it can be read in all of these ways: a celebration of the overthrow of a dictator, a subversion of a classical nude portraiture, or an assertion of her own triumph in a male-dominated world. Right.
Wow.
And that was what made me, that was how I found her, was this first photo. And I just remember, you can't take your eyes off of it. It's hard to explain what it evokes, but that last description, an assertion of triumph in a male-dominated world, rings very true to me, just in my own personal opinion. It also feels very like she's literally immersing herself in what's happening, right? There's something interesting to me and deeply unsettling about being in such a private space of someone who was so horrendously evil, and how human that makes that evil person, right?
Yeah.
Like,
because there's, like, danger in making someone into this, like, monster.
Right. You know? We can imagine
just that. Just a real person that does real things, and that's the scary thing.
Yeah, the scary, that this is what we're capable of, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just, wow, really, really powerful. So she comes out of this time, and she has really bad PTSD, of course. The end of this story is, like, not super uplifting. I'm just going to warn you. She has really bad PTSD, which makes sense. She gets pregnant at 40 and has her son, who ends up doing all of this research later on. But she just, motherhood was scarier to her than anything she had already done.
Interesting.
She starts to feel kind of sidelined, is how it's described. There's this patriarchal post-war Britain. She had kind of a hard time because so much emphasis had been put on her looks in a certain, like, to look a certain way.
Yeah.
As she, like, went through completely normal changes of having a child and her body changed, she became very uncomfortable with how she looked. And I think that added to her depression, which is really sad because it's like, oh my God, like, that's all normal and beautiful and wonderful. But more and more, all of the sources I read, it just really seemed like suddenly she was in this very domestic sphere and it was hard for her. And this is also where we talk about complicated women, because, like, she's amazing and she did all these things and it's really exciting and she was so brave and she was not a good mother. She was not a good mother. She was depressed. She was an alcoholic. It does not sound at all like she was really there for her son.
That's so rough.
Yeah. So she contains all of this, right? And one thing that she started to do that I was like, oh, that's amazing, to kind of deal with this supposed lack of creativity in this different setting, is she started making these enormous gourmet feasts at her home.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that in the description you gave us.
Oh yeah, that's in there too, right? So these enormous gourmet feasts, and not just like normal food, but like green chicken and like surrealist, like she would make surrealist based food art.
That's awesome.
And there were really sweet stories about, like, her son would be in Picasso's studio hanging out with him because she was really close to Picasso. And it was like, you know, Picasso would let him touch anything and play with anything that he wanted. And
wow.
So there, you know, it's like, it's like there's a little bit of both. Like, she's not mm-hmm. she's not a great mother, and she is depressed, and she is an alcoholic, and she is really, really struggling, and that's having an effect on her child. And at the same time, he's having this kind of surreal experience. He described at one point, like, later on in life, realizing that if he had taken the wrong step in that studio and had, like, gone through a canvas, it would have been, like, a $1 million accident, mm-hmm. you know? Like, yeah. he could have, like, broken something. There's another story about, I think it was driftwood. He, like, found some driftwood, this her son did, and made this driftwood monster and brought it to Picasso. And Picasso, like, loved it. It was like, oh, this is so amazing. Like, you know, so you get this, like, kind of incredible childhood where you're surrounded by these yeah. artists and this welcoming atmosphere, but then you have this deeply troubled mother who kind of can't be there in the way yeah. that you need her to be.
Well, and that's so hard too, because, you know, like, you can't fault her for that, because she, you know, an entire generation of people is going through that.
Right. Exactly. You
know, like, people traumatized from that time.
Yeah.
And yeah. from what they experienced. So it's like, I'm sure her experience is very universal.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. For that moment. Absolutely. There's a great quote from her that she wrote that I think kind of embodies her a little bit with the sweet and the sorrow. But she once wrote, "I keep saying to everyone, I didn't waste a minute all my life. But I know myself now that if I had it over again, I'd be even more free with my ideas, with my body, and my affection."
Wow. I love that.
The final note I want to leave you with is, sorry, I think that that's really sweet. I just thought the driftwood note again, and it always makes me really happy.
yeah. What a childhood.
What a childhood. So a little bit more about her son, Anthony Penrose. After her death in 1977, he started diligently preserving and collating all of her work. So he discovered in the attic after her death 60,000 original negatives, 20,000 prints and contact sheets, and thousands of original documents and manuscripts. And so he launched this online library, and I believe there might be a physical location in it as well. But I'm not sure, because this was a little bit older, so it might not be. I'm imagining you can still go there. We can look into that. But I think this is really beautiful too. Even though she was a hard mother and it was a really difficult childhood, he seemingly has dedicated his life to preserving all of this work that she did.
Well, it sounds like he understood where, even though it was probably extremely painful, he understood where she was coming from, you know?
Absolutely.
He was probably a child at a very specific moment in her life.
Right. Something that's important to me when I was studying her, and I want to word this really correctly. When I was studying her, this person, Lee Miller, more than any other woman I've covered, the tone and general emotional impression that I got from certain articles definitely seemed to have some bias. I mean, there's bias in everything, but it's interesting to me that I encountered articles that seemed a little bit more cutting about her and how she lived her life, maybe a little bit more judgmental than other people I've researched. And so as I'm trying to put this profile together, which I know is, like, kind of all over the place because that was her life. Like, I'm in New York. I'm modeling. I am Man Ray's pupil in Paris. Now I'm in Egypt. Now I'm not married in Egypt. Now I'm with this new man. Now it's World War II. Now I'm documenting World War II. Now I have PTSD. Now I have a son. Now I'm making Dr. Seuss food. Like, I think this is, like, it's all over the place, right? And anyone who's a Lee Miller scholar would be wringing their hands. Like, there's so many important details that you're leaving out. But when I was reading what I was reading and just kind of getting the feel for her, it struck me that there could be this judgmental tone from people covering her while out of the same, like, the other side of their mouth, they could be like, she really lived her life on her own terms, right? But, like, kind of feeling a little bit they were judging her for those terms. And I'm certainly not saying she's innocent, right? I mean, it sounds as if she was incredibly hard to be around if you were her kid, right?
And well, I mean, think about all the powerful men that are super hard to be around, and that's, right, like, a footnote.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And when her son...
just take that scrutiny into some perspective.
Exactly. And, like, when her son talks about it, I'm like, well, obviously we should listen, right? He's the one that knows. Yeah. But more than anything, I had this burning desire in me as I was working on it to just be like, I don't want to, as much as I can, I don't want to take this story and make it what I think her life was.
Yeah, I understand that. You're like, but the other way sounds so fun.
I know, which is what I'm always aiming for, right? But it's like, I just want to say what happened. And she was really private in a lot of ways. And so what her family does with everything they know about her is their business. But for me, I feel hesitant to put an overarching theme on it.
Well, and I even, like, the whole thing about, like, her as a mother, I just, again, I want to say, like, I don't know, I'm thinking about JFK because I was just listening to the last podcast on the Left series. It's been amazing. Yes. Yeah. But, like, we never heard a single thing about how he was as a parent, you right. know, or, like, all of these people. I'm sure, like, we never hear how famous men are as parents.
Right.
And so, like, part of me is like, it's nobody's business how she was as a mother.
Right. In the, you know, on the archive page with the bio section that I'm assuming her son wrote, he doesn't talk about it. He doesn't talk about, you know, man, she was a really terrible mom. Sounds like he might reference it in the book, and that's fine. Like, again, he gets to. He was the son, right? Like, he can talk about it. But it is interesting. It was mostly the Guardian piece, honestly, but it was interesting to me that in the Guardian piece, it was like, oh, this is coming up. Okay. Oh, I guess this is really important. because, yeah, we don't talk about famous men and how they are as fathers.
Yeah, ever.
But I don't know. I love learning about her, and
I'm excited to see her photographs.
God. They're so beautiful. They're so beautiful. I don't know if this is still accurate, but there was an exhibit. I'm sure it's not there anymore, sadly. But there was an exhibit called The Indestructible Lee Miller at the NSU Art Museum in Fort Lauderdale. And it focused on her lifetime of work, her war photography, alongside photographs of her friends, such as Picasso and Jean Dubuffet, I'm hoping. And all, you know... I think that's what I want to leave us with, is that if you were to go and look at her work, and they talk about this even in, like, the online archive, when you go through the photos, you might see a beautiful photo of Picasso, you might see a beautiful photo of her, and you might see what it looked like at the liberation of Dachau, and they're all going to be together. And that how her life was, right? Mm-hmm. It was all of it together. It was trauma and tragedy and beauty and art and really fucking crazy food and motherhood and patriarchy and being a muse and being in charge and the male gaze and subverting the male gaze. Like, she contained all of it, and apparently it was all upstairs in her attic.
Wow, that's wild.
So that is the abbreviated story of, I would say, the rather glorious Lee Miller, who we will not forget, who took a damn bath in Hitler's bathtub. Like, wow. I'm never going to be over it. Like, in combat boots. Took her muddy combat boots off and got to work.
Yeah, I love it. And I think it's so, like, I think it's okay that we talk about complicated ladies. Yeah. I don't think there's a special lady out there that isn't complicated.
Absolutely not.
And I think it does a disservice to people if you brush over that. Because then future people, future special ladies are like, trying to live up to this thing that doesn't exist.
Right. Well, and I don't want to, with her a little bit more open-minded practices, there was definitely some judgment in the things that I read. And it's like, we don't know the story. Like, we don't know what everybody agreed to. And why does it mean there was anything wrong? Maybe it was just nice. You know, like, maybe she was just like a nice, free-spirited, footloose and fancy free surrealist.
Well, yeah, having a good time. It actually makes me think of like Hatshepsut in a way. And like, maybe we're not done figuring out how to remember her, you know? Like, maybe when journalists aren't so judgy, maybe we'll get different versions of her story, you know?
I thought about her a lot when I was researching this, when I started to encounter this judgment, because I was like, oh, wait. Like, I don't have time right now with what's happening to do this, like, as deep of a dive as I want to. But, wow, just this, like, very explicit bias coming out, this tone where I was like, oh, weird. Because usually, you know, the majority of articles, it's like I find, like, the biography pieces and I find those sorts of sources. Mm-hmm. And then I find the articles that are like 15 women that blew the roof off of history and you never even knew they had dynamite. And, like, you know, it's all, like, very positive.
Celebratory.
Like, yeah. Glowing, which is, you know, its own thing. But this is the first time ever that I was like, I don't feel like we are telling this story. How, I don't know. Something felt fishy.
Yeah, I love it. And you know what? You're doing the work. You're asking those questions, and you can start the new phase.
That's right. And much like that photograph that I taught my students, you can't look at one part of it and think you know all of what's going on. You need the whole thing.
Metaphor.
For context. Let your mind do the work. Okay, wonderful. What a wonderful, relaxed episode. I hope that that went well for you over there.
I hope everybody is feeling relaxed. I'm feeling the most cozy. I feel like I got to go on some adventures today, and I really like that.
The sea air is just in my face. The mist. Mm-hmm. What a delight.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you're feeling breezy and like you had a chance to go places and learn things. We're here for you.
Yep, we are.
Did we tell you you're perfect? Because you are.
So beautiful.
Everything you're doing is the right thing, even if it involves waking up with cake batter on your hands.
Listen.
As you had said.
What have you been doing to your hair? It's so gorgeous. I love the grow out. I don't think you need to wash it. You're very beautiful. That's what I want to tell everyone.
Yeah.
Speaking of very beautiful, you know what we have to do?
What do we have to do?
Special lady shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to go first or should I?
You go first.
Okay, we'll just do it in the order.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll just do it in the order. Okay. Sounds my good. Special lady shout outs. I actually have two because I thought of one and then I thought of another one and I'm just going to do both. And this one doesn't quite count, but one thing that's really keeping me going right now, because I told you I like to listen to things, but I just have not been able to listen to the news.
Right.
So I'll listen to the news for like an hour and then I have to turn it off. And then the things that I've been going to are Agatha Christie novels.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love them so much. I started with Miss Marple, but I actually realized that, because they, you know, they're from, like, the 40s. Mm-hmm. They've got some problematic items, but Miss Marple seems to have more problematic items than her other books.
Sure.
I've been listening to them on Audible. Phoebe Judge from Criminal has been reading mysteries out loud every day on a new podcast called Phoebe Reads a Mystery.
Love it.
And she started off with Agatha Christie. But those, I just love them. They're so fun. I get to go on another mind adventure. And I know I'm trying to pay attention as much as I can, but also need these escapes just to keep going.
Right. And of course.
Maybe even when I was, like, nervous to go to the grocery store, I was like, well, at least I have an Agatha Christie novel in my headphones. So I love her so much. I'm so glad she was so proficient and brought the world so many good mysteries. But then my special lady shout out of ladies in my life, I, as you know, went through a big application process recently.
Yes.
And it was for a position I felt particularly nervous about. And so I was like, the only thing I know how to do is reach out to the special ladies in my life and get some help.
Yeah.
And so I got some help from you, from our good friend Tiana. Hello, Tiana. When you have this, maybe you're out on your little walk, because she's going on lots of walks because she's pregnant. And she's about to have a baby.
It's so exciting.
And I got a lot of help from your previous special lady shout out, Laura Lafredo.
Wait, helped two in out. A row? Two in a row.
I know.
Laura Lafredo has become the special lady shout out all-star.
Yeah, I know. She gets her picture on the wall. And so she helped me out a lot, and Jessica Crockett delivered me the most amazing encouragement text messages ever. So as I was thinking about it, I was like, I have this group of like amazing, smart, encouraging women, and in my mind I just started calling it the encouragement coven.
Oh my god.
So I want to give a special lady shout out to all of the members of my encouragement coven, because you guys really got me through, whether it was like doing a proofread or just being like, no, this is actually really good, you're gonna be fine, or Jessica just bringing me the most Jessica Crockett bringing me the most encouraging text messages ever.
So amazing.
So yeah, you guys really lifted me up and got me through. And I feel so grateful because you made the process so wonderful and so uplifting. So thanks so much for having my back. All of the witchiest encouragement vibes.
That's all I want all of the time to give you.
That it was pretty great.
Tiny songs about animals. That's amazing. You did such a good job on that application. I am excited about my special lady shout out this week.
I'm excited for you.
It's podcast related, and it could not have come at a better time. So I am, as you know, obsessed with a podcast called Mega, M-E-G-A. Mm-hmm. It is a satirical podcast about a fictional mega church, and it is amazing and hilarious. It's improvised. I've studied improv. I do not know how they do what they do. I thought it was scripted for like the first season and a half, and then I was like, are you kidding me with this? Like,
that's
how?
Amazing. I didn't know
so
that.
So incredible. Cool. They're so incredible. And they do a segment on nearly every show called Mailbag, where their fictional characters will answer a letter from the mailbag, and you can submit letters, right? And, you know, fictional letters. And so a while ago, I think, I don't remember, a couple months ago maybe, I was like, I'm going to write a letter because, you know, I, without getting into the whole thing, love a good joke about mega churches. This is something I knew about in high school.
It's and in your wheelhouse.
It's in my, we'll just say that. That's a fun way to not discuss trauma on the podcast. It's in my wheelhouse. And... But I wrote this letter, and it was way too long. Like, it was way too long. But it was this whole thing, this whole fictional letter, and I, you know, I had a lot of fun writing it and sending it, and I forgot about it. And then this last week, I got an email from Holly Laurent. I really hope I'm saying your name right, Holly. And they used it on their Easter episode. Like, they answered it.
I'm so proud of you!
And I, so I got this email and I freaked out because I have zero cool. And I, like, you know, wrote back like, oh my God, I'm so excited. At least I hope that's what I wrote, because I feel like I just rambled again. I'm like, good. No, write another long email, Jessica. That's good. You didn't already do that. Come on. But I was like, oh, great. That's great. And then I listened to it and I'm like, you listen to the whole episode. It's at the end. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it finally got to the mailbag section. And they read the whole thing, which made me want to cry, because I was like, what? They read the whole thing? Because
it was all so good.
Well, I or they were just really nice. And then they had so much fun with it, her and the other co-host, Greg. I mean, it was just like, it was hilarious because they're hilarious. They did so many fun things with it. And it was just, as somebody who is a podcaster and a writer and wants to write more comedy, hearing something that I wrote, some like little thing I kind of put together, hearing two like brilliant comedians work with it and make it much bigger than what it was. I was like, this is the, like, I smiled for like 5 hours. Like my face hurt so
bad. Oh, that makes me so happy.
I was like, oh my God, I wrote something and then really, really, really smart, funny people did something with it. And it was just like, you know, Sunday was really hard because I was going to be with my family on Easter in Illinois and, you know, my dad's a minister and it's this like really special day and for the family, like it's just a lot of tradition and I was really having a hard time not being there. So to have this like really amazing and hilarious episode that I got to be like one tiny part of, like it made my whole year. And producer Chad and I talked about it so much. He's also a huge fan of Mega. And like, he's like texting me like right after it had come out, like, have you listened to it? Have you listened to it? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm listening to it right now. And I called him. Oh, we talked for like 40 minutes and it was just me shrieking like, Chad, Chad, like just like yelling the whole time. So anyway, but I'm not good at brevity. That's what we've learned in any form.
You're good at a whole lot of things is what we learned.
Yeah, but not brevity. But anyway, so my special lady shout out to Holly. I can't say your last name because I'm nervous. You made my whole week. You made probably my year. That was so fun. Oh my God, when we can have shows again, please, please, please do your live show in the Pacific Northwest.
We'll go.
We will all go. And you're making hilarious, incredible work. And it's so wonderful. So that's my shout out.
Yay. So many special ladies in our lives.
So many. We are just too blessed to be stressed. Okay, that's from the show.
That's how we'll end it.
That's from the show. That's from the show. Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Too blessed to be stressed.
I love it. Well, we are too cozy to mosey.
Oh, that's our podcast one. Too cozy to mosey, 2020.
That actually is the story of my life. I'm like, I love it. Should I get up? No.
No. You know, is it just me or has Netflix stopped asking, are you still watching?
Oh, I don't know.
I think they've stopped. I think they know now.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, there's no shame right now.
Why would we shame them? Why would we? Yeah. Just, do you want to watch another episode of such and such? Yes, I do. Don't make
what
me
if it
answer.
Just says, okay, here you go.
Oh my God. What if, you know what Netflix should do? They should be like, have you had a water break? Like, they should, like,
have
make
you, gone
you
to the
like,
bathroom?
Yeah, like, hydrate. Or, you know, have a tiny snack. Your blood pressure could be crashing. Like, get a breath of fresh air. Come right back. Come right on back. That's what they should be doing.
Yeah.
Netflix, reach out to us. We're ready for your helping. We're ready to help you program.
Yeah. You don't even know how ready you are for our ideas.
Oh, boy. We've got a lot. We've got a lot. Watch we take over Netflix and suddenly all the content is like adorable animals and murder mysteries. And they're like, wait, what's going on?
I feel like that's what would happen.
And dance shows, like dance mom shows.
Ugh, love it.
Oh, but also 90s thrillers because I'm obsessed with them right now. I'm going through a real Michael Douglas phase, but that's a conversation for another time.
Oh, I can't wait to hear your suggestions. We, like, not predictably, we were just like, screw it, we're getting BritBox. And so that's where my brain has been.
Yeah. You know what? That's fine. Okay. Well, Caitlin, I want you to stay the coziest you've ever been. Okay.
I can do it.
I believe in
affirmative.
You. Affirmative. Ghostwriter. I'm going to, I don't know what I'm going to do. Probably stay in this bathrobe. That's my goal. And
I love it.
I'm going to watch some
Housewives. Write that on your to-do list. We're going to
stay
in we're going to stay the bathrobes. Coziest, stay the easiest. You guys too. We're going to get through this.
We are.
Things are scary. We're here for you.
We are.
And we love you.
We love you a lot. If you want to tell us about special ladies in your life, you can always do that.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If you want us to send you adorable animal photos, We would probably do it.
Oh yeah, like do you we can we're here to make you happy.
Yeah.
Just tell us within
Yeah.
reason.
Within reason.
Yeah.
What do you
We're here
need?
for you. Tell us.
Eat a
Oh,
snack.
and we would love it if you subscribe to us and gave us reviews because that's how people see us. Thank you.
Yes, find us on the socials, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the Twitters, and all the places that I try to hide from because I'm
Yeah.
a analog troll.
But we're there. We're there. We're here for you. Come talk to us. And
Yeah.
yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
Be gentle with yourself.
Be the easiest and the breeziest.
Easy breezy, beautiful,
You.
special lady girl.
It's,
Caitlin. Caitlin. Caitlin.
yes.
I love you.
I love you too.
Oh, good.
Okay.
I'm glad we have that sorted. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.